Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. On today's show, I'll be presenting another in my Health Challenges series. My guest is Elaine Mansfield. Mansfield was trained in and worked for many years in the field of hospice care. For over 40 years, she was also a student of Jungian philosophy and meditation. She is the author of the award-winning memoir about her husband's death called Leaning Into Love, A Spiritual Journey Through Grief, published by Larson Publications in 2014. In the mid-1990s, Mansfield began to experience hearing loss and was eventually diagnosed with Meniere's disease, a multifaceted syndrome that causes hearing loss, distortion of hearing, as well as vertigo. We'll talk to Mansfield about how she has navigated this life-changing illness, and welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot.
Now tell us about the beginning of this hearing loss. 1996, you were traveling through the mountains and you heard a pop in your ear. Take us from there.
Right. I was near Flagstaff, Arizona. I was driving. My husband was sleeping next to me in the passenger seat, and I heard a pop, and I assumed it was an elevation issue. Mm. But I also thought, you know, I couldn't figure out what it was, and I tried various things, and nothing seemed to change it. So eventually, when I got back to Ithaca, I started seeing doctors.
Yeah, yeah. And so eventually after that trip, you started having problems hearing in noisy places and different distortions, right? So tell us what happened. They told you finally you needed hearing aids.
Well, in the beginning, I did not need a hearing aid, but there was an obvious loss of hearing in my left ear. But I kept going, and then in time I needed one hearing aid, and then in time I needed two hearing aids, because in the beginning they thought, this must be a virus or something like this that you had, and we don't think you'll lose any more hearing. Mm. But I just kept losing hearing anyway, and I was going up to Strong Audiology because I felt they were the best in the area, but I found out how little people know about certain kinds of hearing problems, so over the years, my hearing just got worse, but hearing aids worked very well until about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, and during this time, you were writing a memoir, you were nursing your husband.
Yes.
You know, I mean, first you were nursing him, and then you started writing this memoir.
Yeah.
You were working at hospice care, so you went on with your life.
Yes, and during a very stressful period from the time when my husband Vic was diagnosed with lymphoma in 2006 until something like 2011, I had very steady hearing. And so during my period of the most stress in my life ever, followed by grieving, which is its own kind of stress, plus constant crying, which plugs up your ears. But during that period, I did not lose any more hearing.
That's amazing.
And suddenly, it all got much more difficult than it had been before, starting with a big roar in one of my ears.
God, you mentioned that. That must have driven you nuts, too.
Well, in the big first, I thought it was something wrong with my car, because I noticed it when I was driving, this very loud roar, 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 and I kept trying to figure it out. But yes, it does drive me nuts. I have a lot of nutty sound in my head, and the way I manage it is just to lie on the floor and let it try to relax with it, try to accept it, even try to see it as or hear it as a sound like, oh,
like
or
a meditative
something like
thing.
That, right? I try to make it into not my enemy, because I'm tensing up when I hear these sounds in my head, which is always now.
Mm.
As long as they make me tense, then it's twice as hard. So,
wow. So when you have your hearing aids on, you still hear the roar? Is it worse or better when you have the hearing aids on?
The roaring part doesn't change too much with hearing aids.
Hmm.
The hearing aids help me hear over. What my head sounds a little like is like I'm in a room with many, many industrial fans, kind of like
that kind of sound. Oh.
People have various kinds of tinnitus. That's mine. Although sometimes I get kind of whining sounds and other kinds of things and clicks, all kinds of things can happen. But that roaring fan sound is a constant. And the hearing aids help me hear over it.
I see.
Without my hearing aids in right now, I would have a hard time hearing your voice over the sound that's going on inwardly.
Oh, wow. Gosh, I just can't imagine it. So you were eventually diagnosed with Meniere's disease. To talk to us a little bit about that. It's not just hearing loss. Distortion. You can have vertigo. Tell us what happened after.
Well, there was some suspicion because of the kind of hearing loss I had, which is a very flat loss. Most people lose. There's a kind of hearing loss you have if you've heard too much loud rock music in your life. Mm-hmm. And there's the other kind of hearing loss that usually comes with aging. But I had a very flat hearing loss across all frequencies. And so there was a little suspicion the last time I went to a strong, not the last time, but the last time before I started really having big Meniere's symptoms. And the otolaryngologist said, "Do you ever get dizziness?" And I said, "No." And he said, "You're really lucky." So I was kind of warned that that could be in my future. But I was walking down the street in Ithaca on a beautiful day with a friend, and I just fell over.
Yeah.
It was the strangest feeling. And she was there. She thought I was trying to hug her. So she kind of grabbed me back, which was good because then I didn't fall flat on the ground. But I couldn't get up, and I had to then crawl to somebody's steps and sit and wait for her to go get my car and bring it around.
Oh, this was a couple of years ago, too, right?
This was 2011 or 12, something mm-hmm, like that. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning of lots of trouble with vertigo. And I never, in the beginning, I didn't have medication. And in the beginning, I didn't know what it was. So I asked her, I mean, I thought it was probably Meniere's. But she said, "Well, let me take you to the emergency room." And I said, "Well, what could this be other than a stroke or Meniere's disease?" Because I'd read about Meniere's disease. So I had her. I was mentally completely present.
You mentioned that.
I couldn't walk.
Or, yeah.
So I said, "Well, now, if I hold my arms out this way, are they even? Is my face even?" I went through
the
signs of stroke, and I didn't have any of those. So then she drove me home. And by the time I got home, I could walk, which is about a half an hour from town. I could walk from the car to my house.
Oh, that must have been so scary, though, Elaine. My God.
It was very scary. I was thinking assisted living in the first months before we figured out how to do medication. And I'm a person who never took drugs. And suddenly I really needed help.
So this was called a Meniere's drop attack that you had that day, right?
Yeah.
That's what they name it.
Right. A drop attack.
I know. So you know, a lot of people with Meniere's also get nauseous. And
yes.
Did you have that as well?
Oh, yeah.
Accompanying this vertigo?
Yes. Sometimes I'd be driving before I had medications that worked. I would be driving, maybe, and it would come over me, and I would feel it coming. Pull over to the side of the road, and then I would vomit like crazy.
Oh,
I would just huge amount of nausea, and then it would subside in a few hours, the intensity of the attack. But I still felt, you know, it didn't feel safe. I would drive home finally, slowly on the rural roads where I live, but I felt very unsafe going out, driving anywhere.
Oh, I'll bet.
And, you know, there was this feeling of, maybe I'm going to need assisted living, even though I think at the time I was in my 60s, you know. But I thought, this is serious.
And you were totally mentally, I mean, it was clarity all the way, right?
Yeah.
Mentally. Yeah.
I had mental clarity, but there was also a sense of disembodiment, which is hard to explain. I've explained it to people by saying it felt like I had the worst jet lag ever, you know, like when you've flown around the world and you haven't really slept for 2 days, and that feeling of kind of where am I and where is my
being
body
ungrounded.
And kind of out of it.
Yeah, ungrounded.
Yeah. So I felt that ungrounded is a perfect word. I felt that way with my body, but mentally I felt sharp as could be and could advocate for myself and tell people what I needed and that sort of thing.
God, it almost sounds like concussion or something, some of those symptoms. Vomiting, unsteady on your feet.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that must have been so scary. So the neurologist helped you get onto some drug regime.
Well, not
You've experimented
really.
Eventually.
Not really. I was going to my wonderful internist, who is since retired, Michael Eisman, who helped us so much during my husband's illness. And he's in my book a lot because he was such a presence when my husband was sick in dealing with symptoms, as opposed to we're going to try to cure your cancer. It was like, let's try to make you feel better today.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I went to Michael, and he did various kinds of tests, and I also went to strong audiology. But Michael sent me to a neurologist who confirmed because of symptoms and because he took me through various kinds of tests, like balance tests, when I wasn't having a Meniere's syndrome experience, my balance was great. And so after he said, yes, this is definitely Meniere's, and I said, well, should I go back to Strong Hospital and get help with how to deal with this? And he said, no, stay with Dr. Eisman because he will have the patience to experiment with you to find out what works, because it's a very idiosyncratic disease or syndrome, and different things work for different people. So Michael and I worked for a couple of years trying different kinds of medications, and it was like very small amounts. I don't take lots of medication, very small amounts of things, and finding what would work and what would keep me going.
Well, one of them was Valium, right, which I would never have thought would be used for something like this. It's usually for anxiety.
Well, what happens with Meniere's disease is there is anxiety. Mm. And I always explain it to myself this way. What would happen if you were a little rabbit outside and suddenly you lost your balance and you couldn't run? You couldn't run away. So I think when you lose your balance like that, the fight or flight reflexes, those hormones just pour into the body.
Yeah.
So the body does feel alarmed. And when I use it as an emergency medication now, and I can go months without using it at all. But a very small amount of Valium, like half of the smallest pill that they manufacture, calms down the central nervous system. It stops the central nervous system from reacting so intensely.
Uh-huh.
And I don't like the feeling of any Valium at all because it's druggy. It's like, bleh.
It's suppressing feelings,
too. You feel very suppressed. But what I liked about the Valium was that if I was driving, I had something to keep me from going into that state. It would stop the nausea and the incredible vertigo.
Yeah. Oh,
so
God, that's amazing.
All these drugs that I thought were drugs I'd never use, but I'm really glad I have Valium with me right now. I carry it.
And they must have had to do a lot of experimenting to figure out what kind of drugs would work. I've heard that they sometimes use Dramamine for the vertigo.
I take something called Antivert, also called Meclizine. That's something I take regularly, and that's also an anti-vertigo medication.
And what about steroids? You mentioned that steroids, which you didn't want to take, and I understand why there's so many side effects.
Well, we took Michael Eisman. He was just testing me for all kinds of stuff. So thyroid, all kinds of things. So he tested me for cortisol levels, and they were very low. Very low. So he said, well, let's just see what happens. It was like, it was experimenting. Let's see what happens if you take a very small amount of hydrocortisone. The usual smallest dose is 15 milligrams. I take 10 milligrams. So I said, no, okay. Yes, I'll try it after resisting.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Elaine Mansfield. We are presenting another of our Health Challenges series. Elaine is talking about her hearing loss and her eventual diagnosis with Meniere's disease. Now, talk to us about that. I know you've been anti-drug all your life. You haven't wanted to take drugs. But you also have tried homeopathy. You've tried meditation.
Yes.
Well, not even just tried it, but you practice meditation. And you've also tried acupuncture. Tell us if any of those things helped at all.
No. No, and it's frustrating. I've tried a number of different acupuncturists, chiropractic. I've tried osteopathy. I tried a lot of things and herbal things.
Yeah, and you tried diet at first too, right?
Dietary things, it is important for me, I find, just in general, to not eat sweets and not have, to take good care of my diet. But I've always done that. I've always had a healthy diet. So I didn't find there are some people, if you eat essentially no salt at all, that it helps a lot, but that didn't help me. So I did a lot of experimenting that way, too.
Wow. Yeah, that's what I would do. I would tend to try all the natural things before I went with all that other stuff.
I did, but then in the end, I just needed to live my life again. So I still take this very small dose of hydrocortisone. One of the major problems with it is that it can cause problems with bone density. So I had had bone scans quite a long time ago, and we redid a bone scan before Dr. Eisman retired just to make sure that I wasn't having more bone loss, which I'm not. I take such a small dose that it just brings me up to what they call physiologic levels. I don't feel any side effects, but we wanted to make sure there wasn't anything hidden going on.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, I'm so glad that the experiments worked correctly. Now, now they don't know what causes Meniere's disease, right? You know, as you suggested, I read up a little bit about it. They could be an autoimmune. You could have a predisposition from inheritance. They have no idea, do they?
Yeah. There's nobody in my family was ever deaf. The autoimmune rings a slight bell, but slight, with various doctors because the hydrocortisone helped so much. Mm. As soon as I started taking that little dose of hydrocortisone, it essentially stopped the intense vertigo, nausea symptoms almost overnight. Now, it doesn't mean I never get them, but very, very rare, maybe twice a year, whereas I was getting them three or four times a week.
Oh, God, that's been so scary.
So it made a very strong, I very strongly felt a positive reaction to it right away. Otherwise, because I was not psychologically enthusiastic about taking it, but it helped me so much, and it continues to help me. So,
yeah. You know, I keep wondering, so many people are getting conditions that have to do with autoimmune reactions.
I
just wonder what we've done to our environment.
Yeah.
It all leads me back to thinking what hidden things, like they're finding lead in all the water everywhere, you know.
Yeah, I know.
This hidden stuff that we find out about later when it's too late in some ways.
Right. And there's a lot, sometimes this Meniere's is related to intense allergies too.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What it is, I don't think we've said, is that there's a pressure imbalance in the inner ear. So that they don't know, it's such a tiny, tiny little channel in the cochlea, in the inner ear, and somehow or other the fluid stops moving through there properly. Does it get little blocks? Does the fluid get too thick? Does it crystallize? They don't know because you can't really see inside that little channel.
Yeah, but I did read that they do sometimes try surgeries. How would they do that without really damaging the whole ear?
Well, I'm not a candidate yet because here I am talking with you with my hearing aids and reading your lips. I'm managing.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not a candidate, but if it gets so that you have almost no ability to function, then they will do cochlear implants.
Mm.
But a cochlear implant means that anything that I naturally have in terms of hearing would be gone forever. It's an all or nothing thing, and every audiologist says, believe me, you don't want a cochlear implant. Even if your hearing is so distorted now, you don't want that.
Wow.
So,
that's an interesting, interesting way to prevent people from having surgery. You know?
Well, you know, it's regulated by the FDA, so they don't even get to make the choice. But they say to me, my hearing, as impaired as it is, has better quality than cochlear implant hearing. But, of course, if you have zero hearing, like some people do, then a cochlear implant's a godsend.
Yeah, so. Is there anything that you can do to prevent it from getting worse, or is it just going to progress? I know you say you're 80% hearing loss right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, Tish. I mean, I wish I knew. I know that it helps me on a day-to-day level to get enough sleep, to eat well, to not be too stressed out, to exercise, do the thing, you know, just basic good health habits help me. And I have varying capacity to really stick with all that because sometimes I, like everybody, start running around and not getting enough sleep. And I think I have these deadlines and everything's so important, more important than my health. But in general, if I feel that the main thing I can do is take good care of myself and just try to kind of relax about the situation.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'm doing is I keep going. I'm going to lead a workshop and do a lecture in Florida in a couple weeks. And I just say, okay, people will help me. People are very kind, and they'll help me if I can't hear them.
Yeah, I know you've had an amazing resurgence of a career during this hearing loss, right?
Right.
The publication of your book, you've become a speaker all over the place, so this has not stopped you. You're an inspiration to people, for sure.
Thank you.
You know what I want to ask you, too? Now that you do suffer from hearing loss, you say people are kind and nice, but do you run into people who don't get it and think you might just be, you know, mentally unstable, or, you know, when you can't hear somebody,
there is that sense when you can't hear someone that you want to say to them, I'm not daffy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm deaf. Those are different things. And the other problem I have is people just remembering, because I'll say, please don't put your hand over your mouth so I can read your lips. And it's hard for people to remember that. But I go to a writing class, Ellen Schmidt's Writing Through the Rough Spots, and everybody in my writing groups in her classes, they all help me. They bring, we read a lot of things out loud, so they bring me typed copies of what they're going to read out loud, so I, you know, to help me through.
Uh-huh.
So I find that on the whole, people are really willing to be helpful, and they're empathetic. But it is another one of those invisible handicaps.
Yeah.
So it's just hard, I think, for people to remember.
Yeah. And you know, so many people are impatient with any kind of handicap.
Yeah.
You know, and I've even met people, they start screaming at somebody if they speak a foreign language, right?
Yeah.
Thinking they'll understand better. So
right.
I can imagine what they're doing with people with real disabilities.
Right.
Now, what would you want to say to people who are not hearing impaired, how to deal with people who are? Is there anything that you would want people to understand?
Well, I think on the whole, people feel that if you have hearing loss, they should yell at you. And really, it's for many of us, for me, for sure, it's not only about volume. It is about volume to some extent. But I need people to enunciate carefully, and I need them to look at me when they speak so that I can read their lips, but also read their body language. I get a lot of information by hearing with my eyes, by visually picking up what's going on, what direction is someone pointing. And if the noisier the environment, like someplace like an airport, I'm completely reduced to, I ask something and people just, they'll point in a certain direction. You go that way and they'll give me all these directions. I just go the way they're pointing. And then when I don't know where anymore where to go, then I ask somebody else. So I feel that the main thing we can do is just try to be attentive to that person. And there are scenes like airports where I will ask someone else in the line, is it because I can't understand the loudspeaker system.
Oh,
so I'll
say,
look, if they change the flight to a different gate, I'm going to just stay right here close to you, and will you let me know what I need to do?
Uh-huh.
And I make out okay when I do that.
How much do you think your attitude has helped you deal with this? Because, I mean, you've had to relearn a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Lip reading,
yeah.
A new way of looking at the world in some ways that you probably never had before.
Yeah.
So do you feel like you've had to change your personality in some ways and stay positive or no?
It's turned me into an incredibly introverted person.
Because
a big change. I am only physically comfortable when I'm not trying to hear. Hearing is always stressful. So I tend to spend a lot more time alone. And that came at an interesting time when my husband died that so I don't socialize very much, some. And especially I like one-on-one interactions because I can do well in those situations. And I have a couple of classes I go to. But I don't go to concerts. There are many, many things I can't do. Can't go to plays. There are many things that just don't work for me because I don't hear. So I've had to focus and become very clear about what does work for me. And so I'm grateful I'm a writer and not a singer. And I'm grateful that what I really feel is my inner calling now is about writing. And so I can do that alone. And actually, you have to do that alone.
Yeah.
So it has made me take a life that's so different. I never even lived alone before. So now I not only live alone, but I don't socialize as much as I used to.
Yeah,
so,
you mentioned that you feel more isolated.
Yeah.
Or
we could change that word to solitude. So I had to think, well, if I were a nun living in Tibet or something, and I could live in the house where I live right now and be in solitude and be able to meditate whenever I want and be in nature whenever I want, that nun would look at me and say, and you're complaining? So I've had to really focus on the things that do work well in my life. I love living in the country because it's quiet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah. Do you write? I know you write a blog. You write in your blog every week or every day? I mean, you're constantly writing, right?
I'm constantly either working on my blog or right now I'm doing planning work on the workshop, then because I'm doing the workshop with someone else, so there's a lot of planning work. And that's all being done online or on Skype. Skype works for me because I can read lips. But I write blogs and I write about my hearing loss fairly often, and I mention it fairly often. I may not be focusing there, but it's another level. I'm dealing with people in my other writing who are grieving, and I'm trying to touch them with something that'll help them through grief. And so my hearing loss has been another kind of grief for me.
I was just going to say,
loss, yeah, another loss.
Yeah. Is there any way you can listen to TV with headphones, or is it too distorted? I know the sound isn't, we just hear voices, but I'm sure there's all kinds of other noise on it.
There's soundtracks on most anything, and I can read subtitles, and if I really want to, I do, but I tend not to. I tend to just enjoy silence, and I save my hearing for things I really want to do. Like if I want to hear someone's TEDx talk about grief, or I want to hear someone's, I saw Terry Tempest Williams interview the other day, and if I want to hear something like that, I save my hearing for those kinds of things, or for friendship, for talking on the phone. I have all kinds of hearing equipment so I can talk on the phone for, personal one-on-one interaction.
Wow. Oh, that's so great the way you've been able to deal with this. It really is inspiring to me. Now, we've only got a couple minutes left. I hear that you're working on writing about mythology of descent.
Yes.
Tell us really briefly what that's going to be about.
You know, we live in a culture, so I'll just start. We live in a culture that is all interested in ascent. We all want to be king of the mountain, queen of the mountain. We all want to be the top. It's one guy takes all. And in ancient mythology, especially goddess mythology, in the cycle of life, you go up, you also have to go down. And in our human life, we have loss. And we have problems that come up and things that we can't control. And the ego's not in charge. And we're not going to be king of the mountain. So that, in Jungian psychology, would be called those myths about that would be descent myths. And they assume that there's wisdom to be gained by going into the underworld or into the unconscious and learning from dreams, learning from the experience of mortality, facing mortality, learning from loss. There are powerful things to learn in those realms.
Yeah, so from the descent you can learn, as you know, people always thought you had to rush to the top of the mountain to learn anything, right?
Yeah.
Finding the light, yeah.
Right.
Oh, how interesting. Well, I can't wait to read that. Give us your contact information, your website, people can get in touch with you.
My website is my name, elainemansfield.com. And if you go there, you'll see information about my book, Leaning Into Love. You'll also see information, you'll see my blog there. I do a weekly blog there. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, and social media works really well for me because I'm not handicapped there. So I'm also findable on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. But elainemansfield.com. You'll find everything.
Great. Well, Elaine Mansfield, thank you so much for joining us. Again, this has been a Health Challenges segment. We've been talking about her Meniere's disease and her hearing loss. Thank you so much for joining us, Elaine.
Thanks so much for having me, Tish. It's a great pleasure.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.